Hey everyone, you are listening to episode 85 of the Making Geeks Podcast, the podcast for makers, dads, and geeks. And if this is your first time listening, let me introduce you to my co-hosts, Mr. Josh Price.
Hello.
Mr. Mark O'Keefe.
Hello.
Let's see if Mr. West Wing can bring the bass.
Hello. I thought we were harmonizing.
Yeah, it was going up.
Not the bass.
I don't know anything about music.
And Sean.
And I'm Sean Jolliker.
Egon. There you go.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
You got to scratch that itch. You can't leave it hanging.
So how you guys doing?
Good.
We just talked for like an hour and 20 minutes, and now it's like silence.
Nice. What do you want to talk about? I don't know.
Glad we got that awkwardness out of the way.
Anything special happened this week for you guys? Anything exciting going on?
I went to WorkbenchCon, but Mark has something he did too.
I got my new camera that's driving me insane.
Oh, yeah. It looked good.
Yeah, and I couldn't get it to do it again.
That's infuriating.
I think part of it is lighting. I am going to need to light stuff because they're...
Well, hold on. This is your 3D scanning camera, right? We got to get context.
Yes, okay. the 3D scanning camera, brand new, released a couple months back, and the software that I've been using just updated yesterday, the 28th, to be able to use it.
It's not me. It's not my internet. Nope. Cable guy, fix your own internet.
So those of you listening at home, Mark, our cable internet expert of the group, just lost connection.
We need to reiterate, not Josh, Mark. Josh's internet, moderate. Mark's on the fritz. And, oh, he died. He disappeared. He
dropped out hard.
He gone. But I did see that when he 3D scanned himself, it only did the front of his head, and it looked like the back of his head was blown out. Way too many 3D scanning accidents lately.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Intel.
Way to go. So what have you guys been doing?
I have been watching Wes on Twitch.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
I recently got affiliate status, which is exciting. Yeah. People can subscribe to me and get bits. Or they can drop bits and stuff now.
Do you have a little trash can on the side?
I don't. I have a piranha plant.
Ooh.
And it has it, and it swallows the bits too.
All right. You have to explain bits to people because it took me a minute to try to figure out what in the world bits were and why people cared so much.
I'm still not sure why they care so much, to be completely honest. But it seems like people do, so I'm all about it. Basically, I think it's if you think of the Twitch stream, which is like, for those of you that aren't aware, Twitch is like an online streaming platform for like live streaming, mostly games, but they also have a creative section for people that want to make things. So you just have a camera and some other software set up, and you can broadcast what you're making in front of the world. And there's a chat box where users and you have like a little audience that can interact with you with comments and little emotes, and they can also cheer for you. So if you think of them as like your audience cheering or clapping whenever they really agree with something that you're doing or want to show support for a specific moment, they can cheer with a dollar amount. Essentially, they purchase bits, which are kind of like little cheer animations. I think it's a dollar, or it's 1 cent per bit, so they can buy like a bunch of them at once. It's really cheap.
That's more than I thought it was.
Yeah. I think you can get more at the larger package, like Costco style. If you buy in bulk, you get more. But
they're not like Shroot Bucks. Like, they actually have monetary value.
I think they're more like Shroot Bucks, actually. Now that I think about it. But I think I bought 100 for my stream just to try, because I had never bought any, and it cost me $1.40. So you can see the conversion there. They're taking an extra 40% when you buy a whole, you know, a small amount. But anyways, you can cheer in different increments, and it generates like a little jewel on the screen that drops into a bucket, and the bucket fills up with all these jewels, and ones that are worth higher dollar amounts, they're heavier, and they'll like actually like fall in the bucket and knock a bunch of them out. It's kind of interesting. It's neat to look at, kind of like a little firework display or whatever. And people like doing that. And it also attaches a lot of times their name to the cheer. So you'll see a name scroll across the top of the window, and it'll say, Mike just cheered 100 units or whatever. Shrewd bucks, exactly. And it'll drop a little, it looks like a little rupee or a diamond or something, into this little bucket. And they sort of get a recognition on screen from that. And a lot of times the streamer will shout out to them, thanks. And it's a way to sort of get like a back and forth going with your audience. And for people just starting out in Twitch, you don't have the ability to have bits. And so now I recently crossed that threshold with a couple different measurements, like watch time and audience size, and streaming a certain number of times within a 30-day window. And I've got that ability now. So I just revamped my Twitch stream to have like a theme and kind of put all the different elements in a certain spot to make them make more sense. And I've been wanting to do this for a while. It's one of those things I haven't gotten around to. And it's actually appropriately themed. It's a Mario theme. Shocking.
Oh, I was going to guess 17th century tea party.
Yes. But I want to change it up every, I don't know what the increment is. Let's say every month or a couple weeks, have like a Metroid theme or a Mega Man theme. I really like doing it, like setting all this stuff up and having animations that are specific to that theme, and maybe have some increment where, or some device where they can do a certain, the audience can participate or do something where it triggers the next scene to switch, because I can switch it a button press. It'll change the way it looks. So I could go back and forth, or maybe there's a goal that they can meet and it changes it if people are sick of it, or maybe they can vote for whichever they want. I don't know what the mechanism is, but there's a lot of interesting stuff that can happen there. But going back to the original question, a lot of people have a bucket. I changed my bucket to a piranha plant, and I adjusted the collision for the bits so that there's actually a channel down where the throat of the piranha plant, because he's like looking straight up. So if they bounce around in the mouth of the piranha plant just right, they can fall down, and it's semi-transparent, so you can see them in the mouth of the piranha plant, and they drop kind of down the gullet. I think that's kind of fun, and they can also bounce out. So I'd recommend checking it out if that sounds interesting on my Twitch channel. That'd be cool.
Bob has a weekly cheer champ. So whoever gives like the most bits, and sometimes it's bonkers how that little digital thing and how a little name recognition gets people so motivated to give these like incremental pieces of a penny. And so they'd be like, oh, so-and-so dropped like 1,000, or so-and-so dropped like 1,200 of these bits. And I remember one of the first times I was on the stream, like not because I was there, but I got to see it in real time. He made like $300 or $400 that day, like actual dollars, not like crazy shroot buck things. And it was just like people bantering back and forth. And then like we laser cut a little, like, I was a cheer champ, hooray, on this day. And so they get like a physical thing for winning that. So it's a little,
I'd also love to do that as well. I don't want to blatantly copy that idea, but I want to do something similar.
Should, or maybe print out a shroot buck.
I actually implemented arcade tokens in my channel. So it actually tracks people. The longer you're in that, in my stream, you accrue money. And if you follow, it gives you another, like a group or an amount that I specify, like a little bit larger. And then if you're a subscriber, you get another bucket. It's sort of like another handful of arcade tokens, right? And so I want to have where maybe you can cash in your tokens, like your little tickets at Chuck E. Cheese, and trade it in for a prize at the end. And I really want to sort of gamify my stream like pretty hardcore. So those are my kind of ideas. Don't steal them.
You should make rupees.
Thought of that too. That'll go along with the theme.
Did you say
rupees? So I could do Mario coins at first, and then I could do rupees at, you know, for Zelda. I could do, yeah, rupees, yeah.
Roofie your audience.
You get Spike West's drink.
Like, I enjoy the creation part, not just of physical stuff, but also the digital, like, art stuff and animations and things. So it's another way for me to have an outlet in those creative ways. I can alter stuff. I've already had Mario characters run across the screen in little tests that I've done. They had a hit of a button, like a little dinosaur run out, and for no reason, just to look cool. So I want to make it like a more of an experience to just hang out. I know it sounds super exciting to watch me edit my Yoda video, because that's what I've been doing today. So if you want to watch me in Premiere and see how I figure out how to not do things correctly the first 20 times, then jump in my stream. It's super fun.
Well, Twitch came up at WorkbenchCon pretty heavily, because there were like really popular YouTubers and really popular bloggers. Like, I knew nothing about bloggers, and they make a lot of money writing articles about making like 2x4 tables. And so it was like a whole bunch of people from across like the content creation spectrum. And each one of them seemed to specialize in a thing and seemed very, very irritated or shocked that like no one else was like, why aren't you doing Pinterest? You could be earning 25% more if you just do Pinterest properly. And we're like, we don't know nothing about no Pinterest because we're stupid boys. And so Bob brought up Twitch and live streaming. People are like, what in the world is Twitch? And so everybody had like the thing that they seemed to capitalize on that everybody else was completely ignorant about. And so he had a lot of eager minds sitting in a crowd while he talked about live streaming on Twitch and some of the benefits. And one was like, there is a unique audience. Like, if you think of like YouTube audience, which is just kind of passive, I'm going to take the place of TV, and then like Facebook audience, which has now just become like grumpy people who hate or love the Second Amendment, and like your aunt.
Yeah.
And then like the Twitch stream is like a completely different world of people. And so he was trying to explain like the interactive culture, and like you get a lot of like one-on-one time with your audience rather than just like throwing something out in the world and just like hoping people like it. You get a lot of direct feedback. And so it was really neat to have somebody advocate for, you know, the weird little misfit like platform. So Sean, what have you been up to?
I've been doing a lot of drawing in the last week and a half. And just posting little quick 10-second sketches that I start working on, because I got access to a nice little toy at work, which is, I think it's a 22 or 24-inch Cintiq Wacom display, which is basically, if anybody's listening doesn't know what that is, it's the full-screen displays that you can draw directly on. And the thing is great. I wish I had one, but I have access to one at work. But
so expensive. I looked that up the second you posted that.
It's like $2,300 or something.
God. Yep.
Does it have to sit straight up, or can you hold it in your lap like a sketch pad?
Yes.
You could. I haven't yet. It's one of the reasons why I'm having trouble sketching is because I have it almost straight up and down. It's technically not for my use, but it is going to be for my use because I just found out that I'm going to be taking over animation at work.
Man, how much are they getting you to do? And they're like, right? And you're going to be the girls' basketball coach.
next year is going to be nuts because I'm doing the computer science. I might be doing advanced computer science. They want me to start heading up a coding competition for this stuff. Digital filmmaking and now animation. And then I still might be teaching English too next year.
You feel free to answer or not answer, but do you get paid different based on the number of classes you teach?
Man.
Well, wow. Actually, no, that's not entirely true. So for the number of classes I teach, yes. So I'm teaching an extra class this year, so I get paid more for that. But you don't get paid just because you're teaching different classes. I have to double check with the additional certification that I got that qualifies me to teach the computer science and the art stuff, if that gives me a pay bump. I actually don't even know yet.
How do you qualify someone to teach art? Like the most subjective thing that you could respond
because,
to.
No, because I have official schooling in college classes. I've gone through an entire program in animation, and I have work experience with graphic design that I was able to qualify as art. And then I also
have not to downgrade your credentials.
No, but
like, that just seems really silly to me.
I had to show evidence of all of that. It was a pain. It took me 3 weeks to put together all the proper paperwork to try to convince one of the regional offices that I am worthy of that certification.
I am a people person.
Yeah.
Like secretly, like I'm Banksy. It was me the whole time. Now let me teach sixth graders how to do digital art, please.
Yeah, so a lot going on. I'm freaking out at the same time, but I'm excited. And within about a year or two, there's a good chance I'm not going to be teaching English anymore. So I will actually be able to do my full deep dive in this stuff that I so desperately want right now. Yeah.
Sweet.
Nice.
How many comic book characters are they going to have to draw to get an A in your class?
Zero.
Oh,
you gotta have them make up their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to, I don't know. I'm going to have to pull out all my old materials that I've kept from college and just recreate a lot of that stuff right now. Cause I know how to do a lot of it. I don't know how to teach it yet or what's going to be most beneficial to the student. That's going to be the challenge.
For those sorts of courses, are there like standards of learning, like a lot of other more rigorous courses? Yeah.
Yeah, we have all that stuff too. I have a little bit more flexibility given in those types of classes. Mm. But yeah, I still have to answer to a lot of that stuff.
Gotcha.
See, Mark, you talked about your 3D scanning already a little bit, right?
Yeah, let's try this again. Take two. Hopefully my computer. Apparently, it might not be a software issue. It might be my damn Surface Pro. I've been running into an issue with the whole system locking up and having to do the whole hold the power button thing. But yeah, it's I'm getting there. It's a learning curve. New piece of software. New camera. I did get some really good scans with the new software, though. The new software is so much better. What took me in ZBrush to repair a model that I'm still working on, is that in my head? Okay. It sounded like my low battery thing on my headphones. I'm still working on a model that for like 3 or 4 weeks now just to touch up all this, the artifacts that didn't scan properly. With the new software and the old camera, I can clean up the model in about 20 minutes.
Hmm.
So the Sweet. Quality of the scans is significantly better. And so I'm working on that. I just finished soundproofing my X-Carve, and I'm on the verge of making a couple things. And I don't know. I feel like I'm at that precipice of stop talking about making supporting things for tools so I can use them, and I'll actually be making things soon, and I'm excited.
Do you have like a quantitative difference? Like, did you take a measurement before and after?
Testing the same thing.
I'm actually a little disappointed. The OSB, I think it's the OSB, the wood pulp they smashed together. Yeah. Brought it down to 65 from 74 with it open. But then I put a whole bunch of pink board, 1-inch pink board all around it and across everything. And it didn't do anything.
Yeah. I didn't think that was sound. That's thermal dampening. I didn't think it would do anything for the sound.
I thought it would something for the sound, you know, maybe like one or two. It was cheap enough.
Traditional insulation, I think, would actually do maybe a little bit more, right? Like a pink stuff.
The pink foam. Yeah, maybe.
Did you mount the pink stuff straight to the OSB?
Yeah.
Maybe give it a standoff. Maybe give it like a 1-inch standoff where there's air in between the foam.
I'm gonna do some more research because I know they have those like the foam, like egg carton, but they're not egg carton. Yeah, they're actually they're the triangle cut things. I have a couple of those, but they're friggin' expensive.
I got the ones that look like strips of triangles, and I put those in my workbench where the shop vac and the air compressor were.
Yeah,
it helped a lot.
Yeah, I might have to invest in a lot more of those and rip the pink stuff out. But thank God that wasn't a lot for that project to fail, because that was only, I think, $40 of pink stuff. So I'm not too disappointed it didn't work, but I'm still disappointed it didn't work better than I thought it would. But
the way that your feet are on the ground or on the floor of their shop or whatever, you're getting like a lot of vibration through that, and it's like resonating through the whole rest of the room. Do you have to like acoustically separate?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's because it's just the router. You can hear it coming through bits and pieces. So,
because this stuff is still pretty dense. I mean, it's meant to hold in heat, so it's still pretty dense, and it's going to transfer those sound waves.
Yeah. Either way, closed and in the corner, I can run it while the baby's sleeping.
That's awesome.
Mission accomplished either way.
Yeah.
And I have.
That's a big thing. That's a big thing in this podcast world. You finishing an enclosure and having that X-Carve up and running is a monumentous feat. Yes. I'm very proud of you, sir.
I'm back.
Episode 85.
From what? Episode
1.
4.
Assemble it, right? Yeah.
No, it wasn't 1. We've been doing this 2 years. I've only had that thing 1 year.
Put together, maybe not.
I swear it's been longer than that.
Yeah.
No, because I found the receipt. It was whatever. I'm notoriously slow.
Mark, put it this
I'm hoping to fix that.
When you first talked about getting the X-Carve, I don't think I knew what an X-Carve was yet.
Damn.
Wow.
Fair enough.
Now we're in the future.
Feels that way. So today we're kind of letting Josh take us through what happened at his experience with the Workbench Con. I think a lot of people wanted to go, but maybe weren't able to go this year. And from what it seems, it was a little bit different in terms of a standard woodworking convention. Is that correct? Or why don't you kind of give us the rundown?
So it was in Atlanta. So if you don't live in the Southie kind of region, it was already kind of difficult for you to maybe get there. But they put it in Atlanta because it's a major kind of airport hub. So it was easiest to get there. But I think the thing that may have prevented people from going was the price point, because a ticket to attend was $300-something. Which is kind of unheard of in this community. For people going to like the woodworking show, it's like $12 for the weekend. I'm not sure. How much is WIA? How much is woodworking in America?
It's about that.
Okay. And like how much is Maker Faire?
It's like $60 for the weekend.
A little bit more, but still reasonable.
Okay. So, even the Maker Faire that I went to in Atlanta was free.
Yeah.
So for people in this community, like really low entry points to gatherings, this is kind of standard, and this place blew it up with a $300 ticket price. But it did a couple things. So if you go to the woodworking show or you go to Maker Faire and like the after party, you know, you have like your group of people, maybe not even in the after party, you get the kind of rowdy people, you get the loud people, you get the people that are there as looky-loos and just kind of there to see people and hang out. This didn't have it. This was way more purposeful, because Workbench Con, talking to Christine, I think her name was Christine, the founder, co-founder. This was for like dedicated content creators to meet industry partners. So they had sponsors. They had like booths around the perimeter of the room and people outside. Ryobi was there, Craig, Inventables, Home Depot, Isotunes, and some other like smaller companies. But it wasn't just like the sales rep. You would see it like the woodworking show, like trying to hawk the newest vacuuming drill press thing. These were the influencer marketing specialists. So when you got a business card, you got the person's phone number and email address to contact and go, this is my idea for a video series, or this is my channel size, or this is what I'm all about. How can we work out a deal? And I actually got a couple of those, which is kind of nice, which we talk about. But they offered like talks. So Bob did a talk on like ancillary content besides your main thing. We talked about like Twitch and podcasts and whatever. Ben Ueda was there talking about how to maximize things. He does his standard Ben Ueda talk. If you've ever heard him talk, he speaks with Yale eloquence about making a whole bunch of money out of concrete and making yourself the best form of yourself. Who else? Evan and Caitlin did a talk about growing a young channel, which was actually pretty good. And if there's ever a thought in your mind, Evan and Caitlin are that way in real life. So they don't, like, at 5 o'clock, they don't just like throw on their Texas draw and start screaming at each other and like flip the switch. They're that, they must have some kind of implants in their cheeks to prevent it from hurting from smiling so much, but they're real people and they're super fun and they're really nice. But they had, yeah, they had dedicated talks from podcast people, from like YouTube people, from bloggers. But the one I liked the most is they had a panel of the influencer marketing people. They had the head of influencer marketing from Home Depot, from Lincoln Electric, like the welding company, this lady who is a talent agent, and somebody else. And she gave the other side of the story, not just what, you know, we in the content creation, put your stuff on the internet and hopefully people will give you money to do so. See, they give the other side. So it was really, really awesome to get that different perspective. And so, like, people call us up just wanting free tools. And they were like, oh, yeah, all the time. They're like, it's so insulting. They're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And she's like, think of it like you're trying to date a girl. And if someone were to call, some stranger call you on the phone, they're like, hey, are you ready to put out? And she's like, no, we need to have a relationship. And they kept talking about relationships. And especially like influencer and like the company, people like want free stuff. And even at the event, like, they was kind of set up like a trade show. So they would have like a demonstration of certain things and people were going around like, what you going to do with that, that machine at the end of the show? I'm like, I'm gonna come get it. And they had these people that were doing sinks, had like sink displays, which are the people that I'm hopefully going to start working with. I'm no joke. They had like four of these sinks that they sell at Home Depot. And the lady was like, all these are spoken for already because they don't want to ship them back. It costs a lot of money. So if you're in to that game where you just want a free thing that was displayed throughout a weekend, hang around toward the end and just like clean house.
I would love to do that for the Epilogue Laser guys. Hey, you don't want to take that thing home? I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm not joking. There's a lady with a paint sprayer who's supposed to be sending me a paint sprayer. This lady was walking around and I saw her like just armfuls of stuff. They had, I think Rust-Oleum was there doing like stain and finish. She had a box full of it. And then she had a paint sprayer. And then she had a portable paint booth. And she would just go around like, what you going to do with that thing? You don't want to ship that back. That thing is heavy. I'll take it off your hands. I went and put it in the back of her car. She was making out like a champ. It was great.
Huh.
But I guess back to the point that $300 got you direct access to like very influential people in the community and how they do what they do, like specifically. And it got you direct access to those people that you're always hoping to talk to, or you get really jealous that people are getting deals with and you don't know how to get a deal with it. They were there. And you got fed. So they sponsored breakfast and – or they catered breakfast and lunch every day, which was kind of awesome. So, yes, it was a high price point, but it was well worth that price point. And I can say that for someone who did not pay that price point, but – which is very hypocritical, I understand. But I would have paid that amount of money knowing after the fact, because this was the very first one, and so no one knew what to expect. I don't know what you guys – came to expect of this thing or why you chose not to go. Was it just geography or was it price point or something that you weren't interested in? Okay. Because you had to buy tickets all the way from California too.
Price point, and I kept getting flashbacks of the scene from Something About Mary where he's talking about like, you've seen 7-minute abs? How about 6-minute abs? You know, just like the salesman kind of thing, like that whole shtick.
Oh,
of,
man.
Like,
well, what about 5 minutes?
It's probably unfair to make a comparison, but that's just kind of my initial thought when anybody's got that sort of get rich quick kind of vibe.
Okay.
So right. That turned me off a little bit, yeah. Even though it might not be justified, obviously. And but this is my first thing.
I honestly didn't know what it actually was. I thought it was just another woodworking convention. But I didn't look any more into it because of the cost. And, you know, I'm probably, yeah, anyways.
So this was definitely not the Grant Thompson Make Your Millions on YouTube. This was learn how to improve what you already have in actual tangible ways. And if you wanted to make a connection with someone, like they're right over there and they're bored because they've been sitting around all day long, go talk to them. It was weird for me in particular because I like the duality of what I have right now. Like I have my small channel that's still trying to reinvent itself and I belong to I Like to Make Stuff. So there were a lot of people in the community that showed up. They're like, oh, hey, Josh is the thing. And some people knew me before I worked with Bob and some people only know me from working with Bob. So that was kind of neat. But going to talk to somebody, you all had like name badges and my name badge had Josh Price. I Like to Make Stuff. And so they're like, oh, you work there. Oh, that's your channel. I'm like, no, not really. Kind of, but sort of, but not really. Like you should still work with me anyway. And so I had to pitch my channel reinventing itself to a couple people. And
have we heard
it
that
worked
pitch?
Out really well. Huh?
Have we heard that pitch?
I don't think you guys have heard that pitch. But it's pretty much like I'm going into a contractor grade house. So I had this little slogan, like I'm going to turn contractor grade into Pinterest worthy. And so I'm going to take all the normal boring stuff that you get in a house and upgrade it and show people how easy it is to make like really lasting, like valuable upgrades to your house, like without having to hire a contractor. So the sink people like were super interested and Craig was super interested. And so I actually had a conference call today, like with the sink people, which was kind of funny. It was like LK sinks that I guess are exclusive at Home Depot. So we get some sink money, hopefully. But I mean, it was so weird. Like I would have never thought about like sinks. Like you immediately go to in this community like power tools, like who can I talk to about tools or who can I talk to about something along those lines. Like, and the sink people were the loneliest booth and like a killer whale to an injured seal. I was like, that's where I'm going. But so yes, it was not a Tony Robbins or a Grant Thompson, this is how you make your millions thing. Yeah, it was the very first one, so no one knew what to expect. Even like the people who put the thing on, like, didn't know what was going to happen. So that was completely valid.
I wish I would have known a little bit more, or even had the curiosity to ask, because that sounds exactly what I want out of VidCon. But VidCon is never going to be that for me. And I've talked to Bob about that. I've talked to other people that were there at VidCon, and. Yeah, and see now I don't necessarily regret it because I couldn't swing the ticket, but at least
well they're definitely gonna do it again.
Yeah.
I mentioned Bob in that vein. He said this is like VidCon meets Maker Faire, or VidCon meets like a woodworking show, and the price point was kind of good because you got people that had a reason to be there or wanted to go there. Yeah, the lobby in the hotel like. Was surprisingly civil.
What do you mean surprisingly civil?
Yeah, explain that to us a little bit more, Josh.
So yeah, the lobby at like the woodworking show and maybe possibly Maker Faire, I haven't been to the big ones, how it gets quite rowdy and you have those individuals that you kind of know like are going to get plastered drunk and kind of make asses of themselves. Like they weren't there. So it was kind of nice. Besides the people that we know from the YouTube community, they also had a whole host of bloggers and like Pinterest aficionados and things that seemed really foreign. So they had like super pretty ladies, like really pretty looking people. And I'm like, who is this person? Like, I don't know who these people are. And they're like, oh, that's so-and-so. I'm like, I have no idea who that is. And it's because they have blogs. And that's where they make all their money and they make their time and they dedicate their themselves. And so it was like, oh, what does that person have to say? Because I'm sure that there's something that some value they have that I know nothing about. And we had a dinner because I went with Bob. I was invited to the Home Depot and Dremel super fancy dinner at this mega swanky restaurant in Atlanta. And so they set the tables up like you had assigned seating. And the chef's menu had like your name etched in on this fancy menu at the top. It was kind of baller, but they put me around people I had never seen before, had no idea who they were. And I probably wouldn't have chosen to sit next to because it was out of my comfort zone. Lady sat next to me. Her name was Sarah from the Ugly Duck Workshop or Ugly Duck Farms or Ugly Duck something. She is a huge blogger and has like 2.3 or 3.3 million followers on Pinterest. I'm not sure how you get followers on Pinterest. But I had like a dedicated like face-to-face like I'm not eating my salad, waitress. I'm learning how to Pinterest kind of conversation. And she was looking at Bob and I and just like looking at us like we were idiots. Just like, why don't you know how to Pinterest? I'm like, I don't know. Like, bet you can't do a front flip. Why don't you know how to do that, girl? And but it was she was like, you're missing out on like a 25% revenue boost by ignoring Pinterest.
Can you and sell she us tried, in 5 minutes or less?
Could I? No.
How do you control Pinterest?
She did. She I just could make go in you and that, like pictures. She could make you. What's the thing is you? She made Pinterest sound so crazy that like you create boards and then your followers get access to those boards, but you can't populate your boards with just your own work. You have to do it with like-minded work. So you go find other people's stuff and put it on your board, even though you didn't make it.
I've done all of that.
And it was so crazy. And I remember she had Bob and I like slack-jawed, kind of ignorant, looking at her like, explain to me what it is that you're doing. And it was like that South Park bit with the gnomes. And she was like, you do this, there's Pinterest, and then like blah, 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 profit.
So we might need a follow-up to this because I understand how Pinterest works, except for how to monetize the damn thing.
You drive it back to your website and then you would get AdSense from traffic to your site. Which could be sponsored, yeah.
That's
and those are linked on your other buddies' boards or something. You're like
cross-linked. And that's really what we had to like draw out of her. We're like, and how do you get money? Like this money that you say that we're missing out on. Like, do people show up to your house and they hand it to you?
And that's exactly why I don't do Pinterest. Cause I really don't like that game. But if your channel's big enough and you're able to drive the most traffic, yeah, it makes sense. So for somebody like Bob who's going to be getting that traffic, I get it. Yeah.
But it's where you choose to put where you choose to focus your attention. Because Brad Rodriguez from Fix This Build That was there, and he has a massive Instagram following. And he gave a talk on how to maximize Instagram. And so you had very specific people that specialize in certain platforms and getting their content out and get paid pretty well for what they're doing, gave a one-on-one class, and those classes didn't have more than – say 20 something people. There weren't more than 250 max people at this entire event, at like a 3-day event. So it wasn't small because it was like sparse because people didn't care about it. That may be the case, but it was intimate. And there were times where like Bob just sat at a table and he and I just kind of sat there hanging out. And I asked him, I was like, would this happen at like Maker Faire or anywhere else? I was like, or would you just be swamped with people trying to like get your attention? I remember Jimmy came and hung out with us for a little bit and I stopped and I was like, Jimmy, nobody's bothering you right now. He's like, give it time. And then like 10 seconds later, somebody came up there trying to hand him something. But it was a much more intimate event so that if you saw people that were headlining, like you could walk up to them and have not even like a lunch. You could have a couple meals with that person because just the sheer volume of people. And then the atmosphere was everybody is learning from everybody else in like real practical ways, not just like ideas. And then once you got those ideas, go peruse the perimeter of the, you know, of the venue and go put it to place, talking to Home Depot or talking to Inventables or talking to Rust-Oleum or whoever else. That reminds me. When we get to what I'm geeking out about, you got to just say Rust-Oleum and I'm going to blow your minds. But it was a really, really good event. And so if you're looking to monetize or maximize your content creation and trying to make some money or trying to get deals, then put the effort into going to WorkbenchCon. Like it blew us all away for the very first time that they did it. Like everybody was thoroughly impressed. Yeah. So about sponsorship stuff. So because this is the first time that I am dabbling in sponsorship stuff, or maybe someone who has actually returned my call when I mentioned sponsorship stuff. I know that Sean and Wes, you guys have experience, at whatever level, with dealing with sponsors or with dealing with companies that want to interact with you, whether or not it's promoting your work or you taking over their Instagram stuff or giving you stuff to give away. Like, for, I know Mark, you mentioned it too, like, oh, certain people follow you on Twitter, and it's how do you take an idea that you have to highlight somebody's product? How do you get that in? Like, what advice do you have to people who didn't go to WorkbenchCon? I just walked up to the person I needed to talk to and was like, yo, sink lady, let's do the thing. How do you do that in a non-face-to-face environment? How did that work out for you guys?
They cold called me essentially in email.
Who is they?
Fatherly. They sent me a Facebook message. So that might not be the typical. It's not like I farmed out that interaction. It just occurred. I think they saw my Mario Kart video and they wanted to make a re-edit of it to put on their page. And this was like maybe 9 months or a year after my initial release of the video, where I was telling people they couldn't do that, like news organizations or whatever, that would like put it only on their platform kind of thing instead of embedding my YouTube video. And it was 9 months after the fact, and I basically wasn't getting hardly any traffic anymore. So I figured it would boost some traffic, which it did. Not a huge amount, but it reinvigorated interest in that video and in that project that wasn't there otherwise. But that started a conversation, and I sent them a link to the Mario cabinet that they did a video on. And then after that time, they contacted me about a build that they had in mind for me that they wanted me to participate in, which was the rocket theme changing table. That was apparently, they got money from Bordeaux's Butt Paste, which is like the diaper cream company. And they basically got money from them and paid me some of the money to make this project that they just wanted me to film the video for, as long as I included that product in the video. I didn't have to mention it or say it. It was just there. And then they re-edited. They had took all my footage, made a video for Fatherly on their own Facebook page, and kind of told their story about, you know, whatever. But it was sort of like probably a random interaction that I didn't seek out. So I don't know how I could recommend that to somebody. Maybe just having a project and maybe just contacting them through their looking at Fatherly's posts and seeing that they kind of highlight unique projects, at least from the maker viewpoint. A lot of times they're dad projects for a kid that are kind of off the wall, a little bit eccentric. And they seem, for that particular client, they seem to enjoy those. So I'm sure if I had emailed them blind, they might have responded and led to the same conclusion, possibly. So I guess you just have to know what the company's looking for as far as content and see if your stuff matches theirs. I don't know. That makes sense.
So for me, I haven't had a lot of interaction with other companies, but I've had quite a bit of practice in how to kind of some things up, even though I haven't had a lot of success yet. So I had one company contact me, which was a company called T-Blox for basically geek-related t-shirts. And they found me just through Instagram, I think. They found the YouTube channel. And I started, you know, the process of trying to work with them, but it kind of fell through. But by the process of working with them, they had their payment structure set up through a third-party site called ShareASale that I had to register with to even qualify for this little business deal. They managed the kind of like the business end of that agreement. So there are a lot of sites out there, or there's more and more sites coming up that are supposed to be managing this for content creators. So with a site like ShareASale, and I'm not promoting them, they're just the one that I'm immediately familiar with, is that they are making the connection between the different companies and the content creators for those partnerships. So that is one possibility to actually explore places like that. And then I've also written several emails directly to companies that I wanted to work with. I haven't had any success there yet, but I did learn a couple things. First is make sure that you have a contact or try to find a contact who is really familiar with structuring and writing business letters. Now, I know how to write, and I could write basically in any format, but there's a certain expectation in terms of the language that you're using and how you structure your information. Luckily enough, my wife is pretty well versed in this, so I ran all my stuff through her, and I got a lot of good practice this way. But the additional thing that I would recommend for people is make sure that you know your analytics. Make sure that you know what the selling points are of your channel, not just your pitch, but basically what you have to offer them. So what is your, and always lead with the most positive aspect of your channel. What is your view count? What is your monthly view count? What is your retention rate for those videos and different things like that to make sure that people reach the end of the video where an ad might end up playing, whatever it is. Know your analytics. That way you can always lead with the most positive aspects of what you have to offer somebody.
So the influencer people at the talk, there were things that were really surprising. I never equated like my project management background and the technical terms and the concepts that I, you know, are second nature to me there and this making world. And in their eyes, they are the exact same thing. Cause that's really what they're doing is they're scheduling out. So the Home Depot and the big box lady, they're talking about if you were to cold call them or cold email them right now with a project that you have and you think it's going to happen within the next month or so, she was like, they work at least 2 quarters ahead. So that was what, last weekend? She's like, we are right now scheduling for Halloween. She's like, so they budget either 6 months to 2 or 3 quarters at a time. She's like, so if you try to call me right now and like, oh, I have this thing for, it's summertime. Let's start some backyard product. She's like, we've already allotted money for all of that stuff already. She's like, so wherever you are, add 5 to 6 months on top of that. And that's usually where we may be planning. So shoot for those things. So she's like, if you have a cool Halloween project, she's like, come talk to me because that's what we're doing right now. She says a lot of people will call and they will miss the boat because they don't understand the project cycle, like the actual Gantt chart timeline kind of project cycle. She was like, we have access to everybody's analytics. As soon as you give me your channel name or anything like that, she's like, we can look up all that stuff. She's like, so don't lie. Don't try to inflate yourself and puff shirt yourself because you think like, oh, if I tell them I have the most numbers, then they're going to be impressed. She's like, we know. She was also explaining there's a new like paradigm shift now between like we would give people the deals because they had the most followers or the most subscribers or the most whatevers. She's like, now they're focusing on relationships to where they can get someone earlier on and they can form a lasting kind of partnership. They kept talking about partnerships and relationships. What can you offer long term? Like what capabilities do you have to be able to leverage yourself in many different areas that company could offer. So like the sink lady, I had mentioned, you know, we're doing remodels on the house. I'm going to make new countertops because they were like, they offered countertops and they offered something else. I was like, well, we're going to do countertops and we want to highlight a new sink for this and potentially for the bathroom as well. And I was like, well, how could you establish a partnership? And she was like, oh, well, they offer these other products. And I was like, oh, well, one of them was like an outdoor kitchen. I'm like, perfect. I was like, we're going to be adding a pergola and doing stuff in the backyard too. She's like, that is awesome. Because usually that particular company, because it's such a specified project, they call it opportunistic partnerships, where it's not like a habitual thing where you're like on team rigid or you're on the seems like the payroll for whatever company. They take the opportunity. Someone is doing something in their house, so they will partner with them usually for that one thing. But if you can market yourself to a brand that you can kind of be that brand's go-to, they talked about it seems like people work here is what she kept saying. She was like, the best ones. She's like, if we have an idea in our marketing department and I go, oh, I'm going to give it to this person because they either have a great relationship, they understand the timeline, they understand proper budgetary restraints, and they make good, consistent projects with their products. she's like, I will always throw like stuff their way. She's like, it's almost like they work here, is what she kept talking about. So if you're thinking like, oh, I'm gonna get, you know, $1,000 in a new drill press, and if that's your end game, then imagine you were going on a date with somebody who was like, yeah, I'm gonna go on a date, I'm gonna get a steak and maybe, you know, a nice ride downtown, but that's all this is gonna be. Like, you don't wanna get in bed with that person. So it was really interesting to hear from the other side. And it was really interesting about the timeline. Like, because right now I would have thought about summertime. She's right. Like, no, summertime's gone. Talk to me about Halloween or Thanksgiving. And then you're on people's radar and then they can allot money because they have a budget. You know, they have an influencer budget. And if you happen to fall on a bad time where they've used up all their budget, then it may be no fault of your own. You could have the best idea in the world. It's not in the cards. They mentioned a media kit, which I know some people have and some people are against, which is pretty much just like a dashboard style PowerPoint maybe type presentation that talks about you, talks about your channel. They want to know who your target audience is to see at a glance if who they are trying to attract to their products matches the people that watch your stuff. Because it could be very, very specific. They could have a very niche product that goes out to a certain group of people. And if your followers or your viewers or listeners or whatever are those people, then you're a perfect match regardless of the size, which is something that they said they had a great awakening and they're able to understand now, is that target marketing is not necessarily you have a million people on YouTube, is that you have a channel that's dedicated to this that falls in line with who we're trying to sell to.
That really must be where the conversion comes in, because it's not just about exposure to as many people as possible, but exposure to people that will go out and more potentially buy their product.
And that's one thing. And that's buying. You can make a video all day long, but they will know how is that going to translate back to money for their company. Because you could talk to the influencer, and the influencer could be as savvy. They could know all the people in the community. They're like, oh, you built the Pac-Man thing. Like, yes, I absolutely know who you are. They answer to the marketing director, and a marketing director doesn't give half a rat's ass who you are. They want to know how much did we make in this quarter. Influencer people, your people are not putting up numbers. So everybody has a boss, and that boss cares about money. And so that's always the bottom line for these companies, is they could pay you what they want to pay you. They could give you as many free widgets as you can handle. How are you going to turn that into sales for them? And if you come in with that mindset that you're there to make them money, and then you're probably going to get your foot in the door a little easier. Which is how, like, I have a super small channel. That's exactly how I approach the sync people, because they were interested in doing work with Bob. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. You're going to get a higher return on investment with my channel because I'm going to give you dedicated content for product. Whereas you want to deal with, I like to make stuff, you got to go through agents, and that size comes with, you know,
red tape.
Not even red tape, but like a more substantial
investment
contract agreement. Yeah. It's like, so looking at smaller channels that are going to get you what you want is return on investment. That's always a good thing, because the higher return on investment they're going to get, that equals more money in their pocket. So market yourself like that, and don't oversell yourself because you're just going to look foolish, because they know everything about you. So BorgBenchCon was cool. If it comes around again, I mean, I don't know where it's going to be next year. They had mentioned 2019, but talking to the founder, asked her if she broke even. I was like, did you at least break even? She was like, up to a couple weeks prior, they had not. Because it's a lot of money to host that thing. They had a nice venue. They had catering. It's a lot. They paid some of the speakers to be there. They, you know, had hotel rooms for certain people. There was money dropped all around there. But the next year, I would absolutely anticipate there being more sponsors, more of those businesses around the walls, because this was just as valuable for them as it was for the content creator. So just because you pay $300, it makes you feel like you have access and you're getting in and you're getting direct access to those people. They had just as much stake in that game trying to find people to properly represent their brand as you thought you got trying to talk to the influencer marketing person from Home Depot. So it was definitely mutually beneficial for company and creator. So there's going to be more companies next year. And rightly so, there should be more content creators because it really was worth the money. So.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So what do you guys
get? So why is she going to go to Woodworking Show next week? Sorry.
Yeah.
Knowing what you know now, you're still going to go to that?
I mean, I can't go backwards in time, so yeah.
No. I almost don't want to go now because now it's just like a big drunken like.
Were you hotel going to go? Man.
I thought about it. Yeah. I'm going to close on my house next week. Hopefully next week's podcast will be recorded from my own house.
It's in 2 weeks. I'm still looking forward to going. I think I still will go, but yeah. I can see the annoyance of some other people that aren't there for the same reasons, you know, causing some conflicts, making the environment less than ideal, but.
Right on. Sorry, Sean. What's everybody geeking out about? My bad. I didn't mean to cut you off, buddy. Sean, what are you geeking out about specifically?
Trying to decide between two different things. One is traditionally geeky, but the other one is something that kind of got me kind of fired up this last week. Let's talk about that one. There's a documentary that I saw on YouTube that's put out through Vice News called The Third Industrial Revolution. And I highly recommend everybody kind of check that out and watch it, especially given it really is kind of like a lot of tech stuff and kind of things that we're into, the Internet of Things. But I think the impact of it is worth seeing and worth kind of sharing around. And
is that the one you posted the other to us the other week?
It is.
Okay. I have that saved. I want to watch it.
Well, it's 2 hours. So, I mean, and I'm watching it like in 20-minute increments. And I think it works really well that way because it is a lot to digest. It's stuff that I've already been reading about for years, but I know a lot of people are not going to be that welcoming to a lot of the things that are said, but I think it's really poignant either way. So I'll leave that as a kind of a standing recommendation, and I'll just kind of leave it at that. Have you, Josh?
Okay, Rust-Oleum. We got to talk paint real quick. I hate paint until I saw this new paint. So the lady at Rust-Oleum had this sign that said paint with light. And it was like UV looking. And I thought it was like UV paint. You put a black light up to it and it kind of glows. I thought it was that. So I really didn't pay any attention because I just really didn't care. Nick Wiggin comes by from Run CNC. You guys know Nick?
Yep.
Nick's super cool. Nick comes by to Bob and I as we're hanging out at the table. He's like, you guys need to go talk to this lady at Rust-Oleum about this paint. I'm like, well, the glow in the dark, whatever paint, the UV stuff. He's like, no. You go talk to her. So we go up there and we're like, oh, hi, we're, you know, Bob from I Like to Make Stuff. We make a bunch of things. And she was like, you guys are the ones that I needed to talk to. Everybody keeps telling me I need to talk to you guys about this paint. And I'm like, who gives a crap about glow in the dark UV paint? But I was wrong. Hardcore. So it's not glow in the dark UV paint as their very garbage sign suggested. It is electroluminescent paint.
Oh, yeah. You plug it in?
Yeah, let me explain for those who are unfamiliar. So EL wire is like a big long wire that you attach a battery to and close. This is electroluminescent paint, and it comes in 4 stages. I didn't have to sign a non-disclosure agreement. She told me not to take a picture of it, but then she said that she may fly us out to train us how to do it because it's awesome. So it's a 4-layer paint process. The first is a metallic base coat. It looked copperish. Lay down another layer on top of that. 2 layers of the tint color that I think they said they have 5 colors right now. It's still in R&D. because they're still trying to figure out how to market it and what they need to include. So it'd be copper. This is all with a high density, low HDLV, whatever sprayer, or in like a
HVLP. Yeah,
or in an airbrush. So base coat, other coat, and then the particular tint. They had blue and red, I think, there, and I think they have yellow and green and something else. But on top of that, there's another like conductive strip you put in there, kind of like foil tape. And then the base layer and then the foil tape would have to stick out a tiny little bit somewhere. And there's your positive and your negative. And you light it with, they had two, so like 18 volts. They had 2 9-volt batteries hooked up to it. And the entire thing glowed. Not glowing, like retains UV light and then emits the UV light like something glows. It emitted straight up light. As big as you wanted to paint on whatever you wanted to paint. And we just stood there and like, I immediately was like, we could make this. And it went crazy because she was trying to determine whether it was even a viable product and who it would be for. And we're like, the prop industry, like I was talking about like a motorcycle helmet, like
yep. They hooked that Tron thing up all to the an things.
Arduino. Yes. Tron, yes.
Tron all the things.
I was like, you could put, and it was like semi-opaque, so depending on the color, like you couldn't really tell until it was glowing, and then it would just, boom, it would just shine up. It's like you put like hazard warning lights on the thing if you wanted to make, I said you could make like Christmas lights if you're just super lazy. You could just paint all your Christmas lights on your house and just leave them up year-round and then just plug them in at Christmas time, plug it a battery into it, and your whole house would like shine. You could hook up to an Arduino and have like a light show on an infinite surface just based on this paint. It was crazy. And so she was very excited at all the ideas.
I could see that being used for a lot of things.
I mentioned a motorcycle helmet. I'm like, paint the motorcycle helmet so that half of the helmet glows at a time, so if you want to turn left or right, you hit a turn signal, and then that whole half of the helmet starts blinking, or the other half starts blinking, or you put red lights that are all painted. A light bulb or an LED strip, it's the surface of the thing. This, she said it was big in the automotive industry right now, which I think is what was developed. Some guy who did like custom car paints came up with this idea so that the car could emit light. But they're making it for like a commercial application for like smaller scale. Like she was asking us price points. It was in that kind of level of infancy, but it was awesome. And the potential like ramifications of something that cool were pretty staggering.
That makes me wish I still had my motorcycle.
Yeah. So it was pretty bonkers. So I was geeking out over, I've never said this in the world, like I was excited about paint. Mark, what about you?
Excuse me. I don't know. Just I have three projects that have been sitting in my mind, and now that the X-Carve is really close to being operational 24 hours a day, I'm really excited to get them cut out. So, I'm excited for some future projects that I'm almost have my hands on.
Cool.
Wesley.
Let's see. I'm excited that I can say my CNC machine's got all the kinks worked out of it, and nice. I'm able to carve the stamps and the handles and the bases for the stamps, and they look pretty nice. I think I was able to do custom shapes and do circular bases and stuff, and they look like something you would buy, I think, at an actual store now, which is nice. It's pretty cool. Up the level of stamp making. Like I'm holding up an example of the very first stamp that I ever made. It was just a piece of wood with the stamp, you know, epoxied on it. And I've since upgraded to metal handles, and it's like using a half inch piece of cherry as the base. And then it's CNC'd like a little cove kind of that meets up to the middle of the, where the handle attaches and stuff. And it's looks pretty nice. And I post on Instagram, and I have a giveaway going on right now till the middle of March where someone can win one of those if they do the certain conditions that are very popular in Instagram giveaways. I haven't done a giveaway in a long time, and people seem to be interested in it, so it's exciting. And in terms of other things that aren't about me, I got tickets to Black Panther for tomorrow night, so I'm going with Robert Riles and his wife and Catherine. Nice. Looking forward to doing that. Dinner and a movie, and then the Maker event in 2 weeks in Atlanta. I'm excited about Maker Faire. I'm excited about, and I got tickets to go see Ben Folds. Nice. He's coming to Raleigh, and Catherine and I and Robert and his wife, we're going to that as well. And they're playing with the NC Symphony Orchestra, so that should be nice. Pretty awesome. We've seen him play with them before, like 5 years ago, and it was amazing. I had second row tickets. It was super entertaining. Don't have as good of tickets this time because the tickets are quite a bit more expensive, but it should be fun. He's one of my favorite artists, and I can't listen to him when the kids are like in the car because the language isn't always appropriate, even though it's a lot of fun. He's very energetic and when he plays stuff, so it's a good time. And this is actually kind of funny. It leads me to something I talked to Samantha about. I mentioned the Ben Folds and how they're, you know, I was like, oh, I want to listen to a Ben Folds song on Alexa, and Samantha was there. And I had to be careful about which song I picked because of the lyrics. And she's like, oh, okay, why can't we listen to some of the other songs? Oh, those aren't really good for kids. Oh, why? Because it has bad words in it, she says. And I'm like, yeah, what kind of bad words do you think they have? And she goes, you know, like words like the S word. I'm like, well, what's the S word? Like trying to see how far she's been corrupted by the age 7. And she's like, you know, like stupid. I'm like, sweet.
There you go.
That's right. Yes.
We don't say stupid in songs.
So like parenting win. All right, cool. We've sheltered you for this long. Much longer.
You'll check again next year.
Yeah.
That's like when Deacon wanted to name the hedgehog Scotch. We're like, what? He's like, yeah, like Scotch tape. We're like, Scotch tape.
Of course.
Scotch tape.
It's amazing how much they pick up on, but also don't pick up on at this point. We had her watch Apollo 13 because it's, you know, astronomy. It's very, you know, not overly violent, but there's a lot of language in it. And I didn't realize that until afterwards. We got a recommendation from a parent of a schoolmate of hers that's seen like 20 times. And there's lots of not like F word or anything, but everything below that is fair game a couple times. But she didn't pick up on any of it. I guess it didn't really stand out to her to remember it because the S word is stupid. So we're good for now, but I'm not sure how long that'll last.
There's a couple of curse words in Black Panther, but they're really quick. Deke watched it and he loved it. There's a great message in that movie too. It was a good movie.
Sweet.
Yep.
Well, we'd love to hear from all of you. Please visit our website, makinggeeks.com, and we have a contact page where you can get a hold of us and ask us any questions, make any suggestions for the show, and check out our homepage as well, where you can listen to all of our past episodes and all of our guests that we've had on our show, which I think we've had a good, 10, 12 guests? I haven't actually done a count yet, but we've had a good collection of guest spots on the show, so you might want to check that out. Remember, that's makinggeeks.com.
And you can find all of our social medias on Instagram at Making Geeks Podcast and Facebook and Twitter at Making Geeks.
I'd like to thank our awesome patrons over at patreon.com/makinggeeks for keeping the show on the air. Their contributions help with hosting fees and trips and equipment upgrades and things like that. And we also like to thank our top patron, Mr. Seth Williams. Thank you, buddy, for your support and all of our patrons. We do appreciate it.
And you can find us all individually all over the internet. You can Google Geeksmithing to find Wes's work. Sean is at Geek Builders. Mark is at Asylum Designs. And I'm at the PI Workshop. I'd like to thank you all for tuning in every Saturday and hanging out with us. We're thinking about changing up some stuff on the show. About to cross over a pretty monumentous milestone for us here at Making Geeks. We're talking about maybe recording one of our big shows at Maker Faire. So if you are a little follower to the show, we'd like to hear from you specifically about Maker Faire. We have an idea of what we'd like to talk about, but if you're going to be at Maker Faire, we would love to hear from you. So shout us out at any one of those aforementioned social media sites so that we can connect with you, because it's going to be a big...
Yeah, good. And also add us on YouTube. Look up for the Making Geeks podcast channel on YouTube, because we might be doing some more things on there, possibly as early as next week.
Yeah, so yeah. We need some practice for live venues. So we may be doing some live shows coming up soon on YouTube. So if you liked the 50th episode live show that we did, tune in and we can keep that going again. Yeah, everybody, we'll like, sorry.
I'm going to run over everybody tonight. Just say, keep a lookout at our social medias for the times and everything for that.
Absolutely. So we thank you all for hanging out with us every week. It means the world to us to know that, you know, this fun little therapy session that we have actually gets listened to and actually, you know, is enjoyed by some people. So thank you very much. That means a lot to us. And we hope you have a fantastic week.
See you guys.
Have a good weekend.
Later.